right, let's do it. Let me get that nut out of my throat.
Oh, Jesus. If I had a nickel for every time I heard you say that. Hey, kids, it's Tuesday. It's, how's the date today?
It's the 7th.
What is today? The 7th.
Yep.
The 7th. All right, 7th of January, 19... wait, what?
1916. Really that far behind, are you, Jeffrey?
I've been sick for a week. I don't know where I'm at. It's 2017. I almost even said 2016. Where the hell am I?
Silver Spring, Maryland.
Yeah, so it's episode 250.
Oh, wow, Taking the Pictures. Big 250.
250.
Boom. Mic drop.
Right.
Like Lady Gaga.
Right. 250 on Taking Pictures, Bill Wadman in Brooklyn, Jeffrey Sidoris in Maryland, Silver Spring. Just, what are we, just north of D.C. They call it the DMV, which I can't really get used to because in California, the DMV is the Department of Motor Vehicles.
What, D.C., Maryland, Virginia?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm with you on that. Or at least I understand the concept.
Yeah.
Well, so, the area around DC has specifically been sprawling for the last 20 years in a interesting way, right? Like there's not enough room in the district, and so all the areas right. around the district are building up over time, and it's interesting.
Speaking of the district, I was down there last night, yesterday afternoon. Excuse me. I went down to shoot some of the last photographs for the book. And I went to the Lincoln Memorial at sunset, which is terrific. I've never been there for the transition from day to night where they turn the lights on and all that.
Sure.
And it's one of my favorite memorials on the mall. And I went in after you know, I got the shots that I could get. That's another story, but you know, maybe we'll talk about it later. Anyway, so I went inside just to see Mr. Lincoln and you know, read the walls aloud for a few minutes. It's such a serene place. But what was cool as I'm coming out, so the steps, the main steps that are right there in the center, opposite the reflecting pool. Okay,
right.
As you're at when you're at the top of the steps, you can continue on to the corners of each of the corners of the building.
Yep,
and just. Beyond my periphery, as I'm walking down the steps, I hear singing. And it's just this group of a dozen, 15 or so people as I look back up, and they're singing America the Beautiful. Just sitting on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial singing America the Beautiful.
Random Americans?
Yeah.
Like just the Who's there. In Whoville?
Just basically.
Yeah.
Right? By the time I had gotten to the bottom of the stairs... They were singing the Star Spangled Banner, and again, just these random, you know, no signs, no, looked like maybe a couple families just sitting there singing. And yeah. I got to tell you, man, I choked up a little. It was just, you know, it's nighttime, you got the monument in front of you, you got the Capitol off in the distance, which is beautiful since they've taken the scaffolding away. And it was just a cool moment. It was really cool. Reminds me one of the reasons why I love this town.
Yeah. The magic of DC's monuments and the majesty of the American, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really is a powerful thing. Even, you know, regardless of wherever you are in your beliefs in like where America should go and what America means and all the rest of it. It just, right. There's something about the imagery and the effect that it has on people.
Yeah.
Something about it is the size of it all, the scale, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Well, and that monument is humbling, right? I mean, yep. It just, you stand there in front of Mr. Lincoln and it's beautiful. I mean, it's just,
ugh. I always go in and read the Gettysburg Address on the wall.
Yep.
That's
yep.
my favorite. Yep.
And so I asked two of the park, I guess they're rangers. Are they rangers? Officers, either, rangers?
Were they national parks people or were they park police?
Yeah, national parks people.
Okay.
I asked if it was okay to use a tripod. And the guy was like, yeah, sure. As long as you're not in in the monument itself, but all around the grounds. Be careful of people walking. And he's like, thanks for asking. And I just thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. People, I think there's a lot of things in life that come down to perception of disagreement or discord. Perception mm-hmm. of discord. That's a good way of putting it. Where if people just kind of open their mouths and talk to each other half the time, it would just sort of deflate. It feels like, you know, when you're in a bad relationship and everything feels like it's on pins and needles, even though it's not, or you know what I mean? You know that feeling.
Sure.
But then in the reality of it is not nearly as bad as the perception of the tension. You know, the tension is worse than the reality.
Sure.
And I think there's a lot of that kind of stuff when it comes to authorities and, you know, people who are against authorities. Just like, guys, like, can we all just step down and talk, you know, sit down, have a beer, talk, or, you know, what have you.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, it's good. So wait, did you get the pictures you needed?
I got some of them.
What was your problem?
Excuse me. Gosh. You know, I think it was a combination of location and I just wasn't getting the exposure that I wanted. If I got the detail in the sky that I was after, then the monument itself went completely silhouette. Or if I opened up the shadows a little bit and you know, allowed for some detail.
Streetlights blow out.
Then the sky blew out.
Yep.
So honestly, I got better results out of my phone than I got out of my camera.
You need to do some bracketing and do some HDR when you get home.
Well, that was one of the shots to get for the book is an HDR shot of the monument. So I don't know if I'm going to like that. I may go back down and go to Jefferson. I didn't have time. You know, by the time I would have walked all the way over to Jefferson, sun would have been gone anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, the whole dynamic range thing. There's a lot of situations where you don't think it's going to be an issue. And then you kind of get into that situation. You go, oh no, there is a limitation to whatever it is this sensor can or cannot do, you know, like
right,
this is where the rubber meets the road when I want that not to go white, but I want detail over there.
Nope, well, and the detail was there, you know, the detail was there in the shadows. Excuse me. If I opened them up,
yeah.
But then the sky just, you know, for all intents and purposes went to 255. I don't know. I'll see what I can recover, but
yeah. How is the Fuji raw files when it comes to highlight recovery?
Pretty nice, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty nice. Even the first gen, you know, the X-Pro1, you're probably not going to get five stops back, but
you can get a stop or two.
I think you can, safely. You can get a couple stops. So, you know, we'll see. But it was fun to be out there. A lot of people shooting, a lot of people out there with cameras, with taking video.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of an average fall night on the mall, but it was nice. It's really nice.
You know, the video thing is always fascinating to me. You know, the people who walk around a museum and just hold a video camera up and just like walking around, like first person view of walking right. around a museum. It's like, do you really watch that video again? Like, what do you?
You know, it's interesting. With
ever since the 80s, right? It's like,
what? Yeah.
With stabilization, sorry.
But with stabilization, the resulting footage is so much better.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and it seems like in the last 6 months or so, I see a lot more gimbals around town. You know, those little Osmo.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, three-point gimbals. You see a lot more of those. And I mean, listeners, any of you guys or girls use a gimbal when you're shooting? Either iPhone or you know, with a small camera? Let us know. Podcast it on Taking
Pictures. Well, you know that listener, Jim Wilson, sent us that video of him and his buddies up in Vancouver with a drone up in the mountains.
How cool was that?
It's great. It's amazing, right? And I wrote him back and I said, you know, it's amazing how much drone footage has changed aerial photography, right?
Right.
Like, him and his friends are standing there and he just goes, okay, drone, go out there 600 yards, you know?
Right.
And it just backs up away from him in a way that you couldn't do without a helicopter 10 years
reveals.
Ago.
Yeah.
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 To the point where...
Thank you for sending that in, by the way. That was really cool.
Yeah, and it just shows how much things have changed, where that whole way of shooting, you know, that's an interesting discussion for now or for later, is the idea of when something that used to be hard, the opening credits of The Shining, where they're following the car up the road up into the mountains, right? Yep. Helicopter yep. shot, famous yep. helicopter shot. When that becomes the thing that somebody can do with a $1,000 drone, do we, right? Yeah. Do we as viewers value that imagery less? Because you see it all the time. It's not a special effect. It's just one of the things people do, you know. Right.
Or that, that scene in Touch of Evil that, you know,
yeah.
enormously yeah. long, you or, know, single shot.
Or Steadicam shots, right? I mean, you know, you start with the stuff in Rocky and then you go to, you know, The Shining and, sure, and whatever. Sure. And then, you know, by the 2000s, you know, half the shots in The West Wing are walk and talks that go on for 10 minutes through the halls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you don't even notice it anymore, even though it's choreographed to within an inch of its life. It just becomes the way we see. And I feel like the drone stuff, it's sort of when people start buying drones and they start doing footage like Jim did, it's like, oh my God, that's beautiful. And a lot of people are doing that kind of stuff now because everyone's getting these little drones. But, you know, at a certain point it goes, okay, well, how are we going to make this? What are we going to do with this that's different than the stuff that everyone else has done with it?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that's where well, it kind of gets
there's still the artistry in it, right? There's still
yeah.
beyond just the technical know-how. There is how to use it.
The tactical?
Right. Tactical know-how. You know, there's how to use did it. You ever see like Fight Club or sure. or Panic Room where
I never Fincher, saw Panic Room. Is that a good movie?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Okay. But in Fight Club where Fincher blends pretty seamlessly CG and traditional film
right.
to create a shot where you've got, you know, the camera moving through this 3D space or this actual space, but it's integrated into a 3D environment. So you can have a camera that goes through the handle of a teapot
right.
or up and around, you know, the burner or the refrigerator or whatever.
Yeah. Places the camera could not have gone. Right.
Yeah, so right, you've got this sort of fastidious attention to detail that's supplemented by the available technology, and the available technology now has just ramped up to where, to your point, you can go buy a drone for $80 or $100 or whatever it is.
Right,
not
right.
a great one, but you can get into that game.
Yeah, but, yeah, but I mean, your Fight Club example is a good one in the sense that Fight Club was, what, 99, 2000, 2000 somewhere around
yeah,
there?
Something like that.
So
yeah.
we're almost 20 years away from that. Now people are doing that stuff on TV shows and you don't even notice that it happens.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, how many shots in that? What's the one with, the Showtime show with Kristen Bell and Don Cheadle. You know that show? Where they like run a management consulting team and it's all sex and drugs and whatever it is. Anyway, it was on for a few years. And there's this weird effect that they did in the beginning of it where basically everyone would freeze and these cameras would like move between people. It was kind of like early kind of, and he was the only one talking. It was like one of those kinds of things. And I'm pretty sure that they did it with some sort of motion camera thing that they did where they would move it fast and then back it up and do the same exact move with him so they could line it all up or I forget exactly how they did it. But that stuff becomes, instead of the one shot in the movie that is remembered as, oh my God, the shot of, you know, following Jack around with the axe in the hedge maze, it now just becomes this thing they do on a TV show that people are like, oh, I like that show, you know?
Right.
And I
right.
feel like there's so many things like that. Claude and I were walking around the other day and he was mentioning, God, what movie was it? He was talking about some movie and we were talking about like low light stuff and how they shot it and the lenses that they used and stuff. And he's just like, you know, back then, I forget what year it was, sometime in the 70s, he's just like, I think the fastest film they were using was like ASA 500 or, you know what I mean? It was a little faster than 400, but it wasn't like 800 or maybe it was 1,000. You know what I mean? It was like somewhere in there. And he's like, there's not a lot of light. You know, and right. they're doing stuff with tools that are unbelievably not up to the job, right? Like right on the edge of technical possibility. And you know, we forget all that when I can go out with my new camera and shoot at 6,400 last night and it's not that dirty and I can pull up the shadows and there's still information in the shadows. It's like at 6,400, you know, my camera 10 years ago didn't go to 6,400.
Has our need to be wowed and amazed been so satiated that we don't now notice or pay attention to some of the behind the scenes or some of the technical work that goes into a film?
I think absolutely. But the bigger question is, isn't that the ultimate goal? That it just becomes part of the storytelling isn't a technical...
Sure. Where you're not taken out of the story to go, wow, that was a great CG scene or whatever.
My mother is in Thailand right now and I've been FaceTiming with her every few days, right? And I was sitting here the other day and it's like, oh, my mother calling, and I pick up and I'm talking to my mom for a minute and I put it down and a friend of mine was here and I was like, we live in the future. I just had a video call with my mother in Thailand and it didn't cost either of us anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. This is insane on an object, on a thing that I use, that's I'm holding in my hand, that's battery powered, that, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
No, you're right. You're right.
I mean, it snuck up on us.
Yeah. I did a live Instagram video from the Lincoln Memorial.
Right.
And, you know, like 18 or 19 people, I think it was 19 people, just watched the Lincoln Memorial with me in real time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's.
I'm sitting there going, I'm holding this thing. I'm holding this, you know, like that's the scene in Back to the Future. I'm holding a TV production studio in my hand.
Right, right, right. So, you know, how many of yours and mine and some or all of our listeners' perceptions are such that, you know, Tom in Michigan is still going out with his partner and shooting with a couple big cameras, you know, big digital, you know, 1080p cameras and a sound devices recorder and all this kind of stuff. And then there's other people doing it with an iPhone and a little mic. And of course the quality is not quite as good. You know what I mean? But like,
yeah, but at 480p or 720p or even 1080 on if it's going to YouTube or even broadcast, does that matter?
Right. And then how much are we playing the game that we came up on and not the game that is currently being played? My subject last night is works for the Food Network, and she does Snapchat snaps for that. See, this is showing my age right here, Jeffrey. she produces snaps. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Okay. On Snapchat,
does she wear little glasses and do it that way?
I don't know. She works with a team of people and they produce these things. And apparently, you know, their demographic for Snapchat ones is essentially college kids and kids in their 20s who want to make, you know, mac and cheese in a mug, good mac and cheese in a mug, because they're poor and don't have a lot of time, right? Because they're like kids just out of college or kids in college or whatever. But
you know what? Any real mac and cheese fan will tell you that a mug isn't enough. Come on, man. A mug?
I've never been a big mac and cheese fan, so I can't comment. But she was saying that one of them, and I hope I'm not revealing too much, she said like some girl in her thing said, oh, you know, we were thinking of doing some sort of promotional thing with boy bands. And she's like, oh, like so-and-so and so-and-so. And they were like, no, this other band that none of you have ever heard of, because they're what the kids are listening to now.
Right, right. You know, some like obscure, to us, it's some obscure K-pop band.
Exactly.
But to, you know, right, people in their 20s, it's the Beatles.
Right. And she's in her late 20s and it's like she's getting the first taste of that thing of, oh, the next generation is coming up behind me and they don't think the same way I do.
Right.
Right. And now I and you are two or three generations out from current, if current is defined by 18 to 24 year olds.
Yeah.
And the way we make pictures, the way we think about making pictures, the kind of pictures we like to make are all dictated by experiences we had when we were younger, right? You know, you and I are not trying to take the same pictures that a 20-year-old's trying to take right now.
No.
We're not even drawn to taking the same kind of pictures, even if we were experienced them.
And then the funny part of that is, I think back to, and I was thinking about this over the weekend, we used to make short films in high school with Super 8 cameras.
Sure.
And that was, you know, back then to our 15, 16, 17 year old eyes, you know, we were trying to be George Romero.
Sure.
We were trying to be, you know, the then rogue indie kind of filmmakers. And this was amazing quality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your crappy Super 8. I mean, there was nothing not exceptional, you know, back then about that quality.
Have you actually looked at Super 8 footage?
Yes. And now, right. You know, I fast forward 35 years to me going, Micro Four Thirds isn't enough. You know, crop sensor isn't enough. You know, I'm whining about this stuff that my 16-year-old self would kick my ass over now.
Yeah. But, you know, actually, can we jump to one of the things in here? Because it's kind of works.
Yeah, go.
The show notes? Yeah, the Blair Bunting thing you put in here.
Yeah.
Where this guy's talking about how, oh, you know, I've been using these 50 megapixel cameras like the 645Z and the Hasselblad and the whatever, and they're okay, but the real new standard is 100 megapixels, right?
Right.
This thing that didn't exist a year and a half ago, right, is now the new standard. The thing is, we always think whatever the new thing is the new standard, right?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Back when the maximum resolution we had in digital cameras was 1.4 megapixels or whatever the hell the D1 was.
The fastest Mac was the new G3.
Exactly. Right.
And you're like,
right,
oh my God, this is the fastest thing I've ever seen.
This thing screams. You know, we always think that that next thing, because it is something of a leap that is that much better and has opened up things in a way that the old thing hadn't done. Right. I remember when I got my digital DV camera, my digital video camera, the little, you know, the little mini DV.
What did you have? I had the little Sony PC-100. Remember that little thing?
I had a Canon Allura, something mm-hmm. Allura. In fact, mm-hmm. I still have mm-hmm. it in the closet. And at the time it was like, oh my God, 720 by 480 digital video on a tape. This is unbelievable, right?
Yeah. Back up for our younger listeners.
Plus it's got
on
FireWire.
On tape.
Yeah, on tape, right? So, in fact, a few years ago, I had some footage of when my grandfather was still alive, my sister and I drove around his neighborhood that he grew up in, and so he could, like, point to the house he grew up in and that kind of stuff.
Right,
you know,
right, just, right.
And we went, and did I tell the story on the show before? We pulled off the side of the road, and he's just like, hold on a second. He goes, park for a second. And we get out, and he goes over to the house across the street, and he knocks on the door. He's like, and this old woman comes and answers, and he says, you know, are you so-and-so? And she goes, yeah. He says, my name is Carl Graff. I used to live across the street. Like, as he's saying it, she's like, oh my God, Carl. And she was like,
how
this
funny.
92-year-old woman.
How funny.
Who was like a young mother when my grandfather was a teenager.
Right, right.
And she invited us in, and we talked to her, and I have footage of all this stuff. So I wanted to preserve this tape, because mini DV tapes do not last very, like, they're not archival, as it were.
No,
right.
You're probably getting close to the edge even now.
Yeah. And there were dropouts, you know, in the tape and the way in importing it. So, you know, you have to import it in real time. You hook it up FireWire. You use your, back in the day when, I think it was iPhoto on Heather's old Mac, I think is the way, or iMovie on Heather's old Mac had an ingestion system mm-hmm. built in. Right. And I plugged it in and I, you know, sucked it all in or whatever it is. But like that's the way it used to have to be done. And now I get annoyed when I have to move, you know, 300 gigabytes or, you know, like, no, not even that many, but like I move 200 pictures off my card and it takes 65 seconds.
Right.
And these are 250 megapixel raw files. You know, it's
or
like
exporting the show. You're watching the meter and you're like, come
oh my
on,
God.
35 times real time. You can't do better than that.
Yeah. Yeah, you got four cores at 3.6 gigahertz, and you can't do better than that? Right. Yeah. It takes, you know, 3-4 minutes to export the show when it's an hour and a half long, and we're bitching about that?
Yeah.
And I've got six effects on each of our voices to, you know, do whatever it is that we do, right? In fact, I was over this girl's house the other day taking pictures of her, and she went to Berkeley like I did, and she had Universal Audio, you know, the Apollo, right? And all those things, right?
Sure.
So she had the little Apollo Duo, and she also had this weird little Universal Audio, basically compute box they used to make, apparently. And it was FireWire.
Like a little breakout box, or what is it?
Yeah, like a little breakout box connected via FireWire that just has DSPs in it. Like back in the old days of Pro Tools, DSP cards and that kind of stuff. So Universal Audio apparently makes one that is, you know, or did, you know, years ago. And she still had it, and she had it hooked up to her new Mac with 23 dongles, you know. And I'm just looking at it and I'm just like, wow, like how fast things change, you know? The fact that audio over FireWire felt like a good thing, and now FireWire just feels really slow, you know? Right. I don't know. It's just, I guess my point is, we always question what came before, and we always, you know, there are kids now who grew up with drones, and that is not a big deal to them. They just think drones are normal.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So what
or,
will they...
Or the iPhone 6S or 7 is going to be the most inept phone that they will ever use.
Oh my God. Claude made me listen to this video, this podcast the other day of some video guy talking about the new Panavision camera with a red sensor in it. And I won't get into the details of that. I didn't even get to
22 stops of dynamic range or something.
I didn't even get to the place that he wanted me to listen to in the show, because the guy who was talking, and I won't even get into it or link to it because it's not worth it, was so wrong on so many of his basic facts of computing history that I had to stop listening to them. Right. He was just like, well, you know, back in the early 2000s, Apple used to
Bill breaking out in hives listening to this.
Jeffrey, he's just like, you know, back before they moved to Intel, Apple used to design their own chips for the Macs. And I was like, no, they didn't. They used IBM and Apple or IBM and Motorola chips.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, he just had basic facts wrong, you know, and then they moved to these crappy Intel chips. I was like, what? They got a double speed boost
that was the
minute
they made.
Exactly. Like people. And then he said, you ready for this one? You're going to love this one. You know, back in 2002, the internet wasn't even really a thing back then.
Okay.
Oh, really? Was it?
Oh, really?
It's funny because I just made a lot of money the past
where the hell was that bubble I was in then?
Exactly. No, but it's like that kind of stuff where you see just like history just becomes this big fog. Anything before you existed.
It was nothing because we were all making $5,000 to do flash interstitials.
Exactly. You know? Right.
Okay.
And, but, you know, like you said about the Super 8 thing, right? Like I've never shot footage with a Super 8 camera. I've taken other people's Super 8 and family stuff and had it transferred. And I've, you know, threaded stuff through a machine, but I've never used a Super 8 camera or, you know, Claude's got an RE Super 16 camera. I've never shot with it. I've held it and played with it. You know what I mean? Like, and there are all kinds of quirky things about that camera that people love or hate or whatever, right? Have some sort of response to that. I can't have any sort of built-in emotional reaction to.
Right. Right.
Just because
the fact that you can get stabilization, audio effects, you know, slow motion. I mean, that's another one. Going back to the video.
Oh, sure.
That,
doing 240 or more on your
phone. You've got these guys jumping around in the snow that you don't have to fake and post because you're shooting it at 240 or 260 or whatever it is that you're shooting it at in real time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's just amazing how quickly we forget.
Yeah.
You know, and that goes across the board. Anyway, I just sorry.
Yeah. No, good.
What was
hey?
This
just as a side note, this Blair Bunting site that we mentioned. Check out his blog while you're there. There's some cool BTS of some of the advertising and commercial work that he does. I thought you might get a kick, Bill, out of if you just click on his logo, the basketball players. Motion studies that kind of reminded me of some of the dancer things.
Oh yeah, look at that. Yep.
And there's a little BTS of him working with the different athletes and stuff to get it. So it's kind of cool. But, you know, if you have a few minutes, check it out.
Yeah. Yep. I will check that out. It's just funny. One of the cameras, 5D Mark II, all but carried the brands is a need for still cameras. It's interesting.
Yeah. So Bill Memes, listener Bill.
Yep.
Hi, Bill. The other Bill. sent in this interesting article from CBC News. About this group of Iranian immigrants still operating a film lab in Prince Edward Island, and I just thought it was kind of a neat, you know, little sort of slice of life story about you know this little lab just still doing their thing.
Yeah, I found it interesting because there's parts of it. Okay, first of all, they charge $15 to develop and print a roll of 24 images, right?
Which is not out of line of places like, you know, DR5 or Indie Film Lab.
Right.
It's in there.
Right. But they estimate the work actually costs the lab about $35. They lose money in the process, he said, but they do it out of love. So first of all, how are they still doing it if they're just losing half their money doing it?
I would imagine that $35 is factoring in a higher labor cost per hour.
Yeah, something like that. And I will tell you that there's people in my neighborhood who do this for $15 or $20 who, mm-hmm, you know, actually have, mm-hmm, a business. So I think it's a little excessive. But it's interesting that he says that the machines are all, vintage technology.
Right.
You know?
Right.
There are still companies that make these things, aren't there?
I would imagine, depending on what they are, but it looks like, when the brothers bought the shop, they inherited the vintage machine that develops the film negatives. So,
this could have been written by a 24-year-old who thinks vintage is anything before 2005.
The lab that was around the corner from my house, called Metro Photo in California, Ike leases all of that gear. So maybe this was a lease to buy that was left over from the shop. I don't know that a lot of the labs are buying this kind of gear anymore. I think, you know, it's almost like what photocopiers were in the 80s, where you wouldn't buy the machine, you would lease it and then pay the maintenance per month on it or something.
My father owned a photo finishing place at one point, and when they got out of the business, they gave the machine to whoever their best employee was that they, you know, felt bad about closing. And you just think about it now, you go, what if I had that? You know, would I even be able to get chemicals that were compatible with it?
Right, right.
Would it be useful to have a thing the size of one of those giant 1980s copiers that just processed film? Because it really was
anyway,
like
CBC
that,
right? News, check it out. Nice article.
I think it was fascinating. It is interesting, though, that this has gone from, oh, this is the way we do things, to vintage equipment, or whatever that means.
Right.
Will
the equipment be updated? You know, this is kind of down further in the show notes, but it might fit here. Kodak announced that they wanted to bring back, or they will bring back, Ektachrome, they're looking into bringing back other films. You know, file this under Wing and a Prayer, but maybe even Kodachrome. But to get back to this story, are companies now back to the drawing board on processing equipment?
Oh, sure. I'm sure. Yeah. I mean,
is Noritsu or Frontier or something, are they working on new, machines to process?
There have to be these machines sitting inside of warehouses somewhere not being used, right? Or were they all really, mm-hmm, thrown away? You know,
somebody's got to have them, right?
Yeah. Heather's cousin was over the other day, and he was like, oh, I want to shoot more film, and I want to get like a little film camera, because he uses like little instant, you know, the disposables.
Yeah, sure.
And I was like, oh, what you need is something like a little Canonette or something, you know, something that's like a fixed lens, cheap, whatever it is. And like, they're like $50 on eBay. And I went and looked at them. They go for $280 on eBay now.
Are they really?
Yes.
Wow.
Because of some kind of
the little
weird,
30, the, what is it? Canonet 35 or something?
Yeah, those things. 28. Wow. You know, whatever. Yeah, wow. Right? See, so they've somehow had this weird market resurgence because they've, you know, like you and I have talked about before, when, you know, DDR3 RAM comes out, DDR2 RAM is worthless. And then 3 years later, it's worth a lot because no one has any and people need it to upgrade their machines or whatever. There's this like whole other side of it. And It makes me think that the film business, even if these films do come back, you're not going to get stuff processed at CVS again, right?
Mm-hmm,
you're
mm-hmm.
still you're going to send it out to Kodak, or send it out to Duane, or send it out to whoever,
right?
And have it done, right? This is never going to be on every street corner technology again.
Yeah, just, yeah. A little photo mats are not going to crop up in parking lots all over the country.
Yeah, anymore. The little hut. Oh, those so cute. That's never going to happen, right? So the reality of this is that it's always going to be a niche thing. But I remember somebody saying that the problem with doing smaller batches of film stuff is that they have to reformulate the whole process, because making 100,000 feet of film is very different than making 10,000 feet of film.
Yeah, because, or a million feet of film. Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
Because the chemical process is these things are reactive as the film is being made. So the recipe for 1/10 the film isn't 1/10 of everything. It's a different recipe. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how right or wrong they get this. I mean, it's the same problem that Impossible Project was having, or the new 55 guys trying to recreate technology that already existed. You're just trying to not even reimagine it. You're just trying to do what somebody did 20 years ago, and you're failing because that information got lost.
Is there something in there where they're having to reverse engineer it? If you're going back to the source, e.g. Kodak,
yeah,
are they going to have a better time or an easier time or a more successful time because they were the original architects?
Well, I'm sure they'll have an easier time than the Impossible Project guys did, because the Impossible Project guys couldn't do it, right? Or couldn't get their hands on actual information, if I recall.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
So yeah, I'm sure that's totally an element of it. And it's the question is whether or not it'll be economically viable. Look, even if Kodak does bring back Ektachrome, which if they don't bring it back for medium format, that's stupid because that's half the fun of slides, but whatever, I'll put that aside. They're still not going to sell that much of this stuff, you know, like who's, you know what I mean? They're going to sell it on Amazon and B&H.
But maybe they don't have to.
Yeah, maybe they don't have to.
Because that's not their market anymore. It's another revenue stream, not their entire revenue stream.
Right. But a big company like Kodak is, you know, that will be 1/10 of 1/10 of 1% of, you know what I mean, the income of these places. And it's interesting how this all fits into the smaller, even my camera, like Pentax cameras inside the larger company of Ricoh, which makes a billion copiers a year.
Right. Scientific equipment,
yeah.
Measurement equipment. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, digital cameras inside of Samsung is probably less than 1%, you know, if you take out the phone cameras. So yeah, it's interesting to see how this stuff will progress and whether or not it'll just be a bump or whether or not this stuff will ever actually get to market. Right now, it's just press releases and talk, right?
Mm-hmm. I would imagine. I mean, that's a pretty big reveal on the Ektachrome front anyway,
yeah.
To then go, nah, we changed our mind.
Yeah. I mean, look, I hope that they do. And I think it'll be fun to see and play with, but, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of cool. It is pretty cool stuff. We're in the middle of a whole thing. Hey, we have a lot of stuff to talk about. Do you want to talk about our sponsor and get that out of the way?
Yeah, let's do that. Get that out of the way and then go into the Ellis things.
We're talking about FreshBooks today here on Taking Pictures.
Talking about what?
FreshBooks.
Jiggity FreshBooks.
I'm sorry. Jiggity what?
Jiggity FreshBooks.
Wicka, 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 wicka. Wicka what?
Get your accounting in order, yo.
In case you're wondering, Jeffrey, 192 hours works out to 2 business days a month. Why the math? Well, if you're a freelance photographer and you're using FreshBooks cloud accounting software, that's the amount of admin time you could save in 2017. How? FreshBooks is so fast and easy to use, it changes the way you deal with your paperwork. And I actually, man, I got to start using FreshBooks as my primary thing because my invoicing system is terrible. FreshBooks is big.
I've got 3 invoices that I got reminders from clients saying, hey, you need to invoice us so we can pay you.
That's never a good sign, right?
No. Like, 3, and swear to God, over the weekend, I was like, oh, shit. You're right. I'll get those out.
And if you haven't seen FreshBooks in a little while, you should go take a look because it's been completely redesigned from the ground up and custom built for the way you work. You can get ready with the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and more importantly, get paid quickly. New projects feature to share files and messages with your clients, contractors, and employees. See how quickly things happen when all your conversations are in one place. There's a new notification center. It's like your personal assistant to keep you on track of what invoices you need to remind your clients to pay, you know, send it a little reminder after 2 weeks if they haven't done it. It'll tell you when somebody's...
send a reminder to myself.
I know.
Hey, don't forget to send the invoice, dumbass.
it'll send a reminder and then you'll get paid pronto, you know, so you can get... You don't worry about overdue invoices anymore. You can create and send really professional looking invoices in under 30 seconds. When you email a client, FreshBooks can show you whether they've seen it, which puts an end to the guessing game. Multi-currency invoicing. So if you're dealing with people around the world and you got to charge somebody in euros or rubles, you can do that. They have great support. Real live person will answer in 3 rings or less. Online payments. So people just pay with a credit card. They don't have to send you a check or anything like that. It's fantastic. They have these automated late payment reminders for people who are late. Mobile expenses, take pictures of receipts, put it in your next invoice to the client. They got everything. So go check it out. To claim your month-long unrestricted free trial, go to freshbooks.com and enter On Taking Pictures in the How Did You Hear From Us section. And we thank them very much for their support of On Taking Pictures and 5x5. FreshBooks. Keeping jiggity it fresh. Jiggity fresh. They're gonna have to do that themselves, though. They're gonna have to add that into the jiggity fresh into the copy.
Jiggityfreshbooks.com. I should register that. Jiggityfreshbooks.com.
What's up?
I forgot to mention this. The metro stations here in DC are plastered with posters from U2's upcoming tour. They are doing the Joshua Tree in its entirety.
I've heard tell of this.
Yeah. Go to U2.com real quick. First of all, Bono, if you're listening, you guys look great. I mean, they look fantastic, right? But I wonder, That's them now.
No, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Look at Bono. The guy looks like a rock star. Wait
a minute.
Hold on a second.
Did they go back to Joshua Tree?
Larry Mullen looks the same as he's looked for 20 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wondered if anybody happens to know, listening, who's doing the photography? They famously worked with Anton Corbijn. And I was wondering,
Anton Corbijn.
Are they working with Anton again? Because I know that he is working with Depeche Mode on their upcoming release.
Right.
So I wonder if he's kind of going back and doing some promotional stuff with U2 as well.
Good question. Knows, we'll have to find out.
A Google
search doesn't give you any information?
I couldn't find anything, and maybe I'm just not looking in the right place, but if anybody happens to know who's doing the new promotional photography for U2, podcasted on Taking Pictures, please.
U2. You were always a huge U2 fan, huh?
I've seen them a couple times, and it was a religious experience each time.
Yeah, they
were
put on a
phenomenal.
Good show. I've never seen them live, but I've heard tell from people who have.
And, Unforgettable Fire and Joshua Tree were amazing shows. I guess it was Rattle and Hum.
Oh, Rattle and Hum. I saw a Rattle and Hum movie in the theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is weird.
And they did that whole thing with Bullet the Blue Sky with the red spotlights and the white ones cutting. They did that whole thing live, and it was amazing.
They were some of the original sort of theatrical concert show kind of thing people, right?
No, I think you'd probably go back to Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But in the straight
King
rock
Crimson.
Sense, right? Yeah, I guess King Crimson. But just
which,
the big,
you know,
big
we
set
just lost
pieces
John
and
Wetton
screens
last week.
Yeah,
that
I
was
saw
kind
that.
Of a bummer.
Yeah, somebody was talking about some personal, recounting a personal story that I forget. God, who was it?
With John Wetton?
Yeah, I'll have to remember what it is.
Terrific bass player.
See if it
musician.
Pops into my head.
And Pink Floyd famously using screens.
Oh,
and
sure. Okay, Pink Floyd would be a
lighting.
Good example. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember when they did a tour of The Wall, 15 years ago or whatever it is, the 20-year, 25-year?
Just Roger Waters, yeah.
Just Roger Waters did it, right.
Yeah.
And then
He's doing it again this summer.
There was also a Who Tommy thing in the 90s, wasn't there? Where they played at Radio City and someplace in L.A.
I think I do remember something about that.
Yeah, and I think, what's his name, famously put his hand or his whammy bar through his hand during the show.
Townsend?
Yeah. He was doing his crazy windmill thing, and he went right up through, whammy bar went right through his hand.
Never a good idea.
And they pulled it out, wrapped up his hand, and he played the rest of the show and then went to the emergency room.
Yeah.
You know why?
Rockstar.
Rock and roll, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because rock and roll.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about these Ellis Island pictures. Do you mind?
Yeah, this is
doing
a beautiful
a
set. No, this is a beautiful set. What is this?
A friend of the show, Cisco. Yeah, this is
theweek.com. The Week.
Which
okay. The Week.
I don't know. I don't follow The Week. That's a magazine of some kind, right?
Yeah, but a terrific set of photographs.
Yeah. So August Sherman.
Thank you, Cisco, for sending these in.
Yeah. So he was a clerk back in 1900 to 1914, when as many as 10,000 people would pass through Ellis Island every day. Wow. And he was an amateur photographer, and he persuaded some of the immigrants, families, individuals to let him take their portrait. And so he took 250 portraits over the course of 15 years. And they've
been Algerian man. Wow.
I know. Look at these people.
Wow. Oh my God. Oh,
Hindu boy, guy, Dutch
the
women.
Greek soldier.
The German stowaway with the tattoos, even the top one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at these people. Yeah, the Romanian shepherd. Look at the man.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. People from obviously all over the world.
Augustus Sherman.
Talk about different dress and yeah, things and yeah, like yeah. What these people were going through. I don't know. Just a reminder that we are all immigrants and you know, that's what America's all about. And so
this is available as a book at Aperture.
Okay.
Ellis Island Portraits, 1905 to 1920. It's in the article, but here's the direct link.
Yeah.
It is currently on sale. Oh, it's sold out.
Too late.
Yeah.
But
maybe they'll do a reprint, but $32. Maybe it's on Amazon.
Amazing, right? I will go look on Amazon while you bring up the next one. Let's take a look.
These are stunning pictures.
Yeah.
And you know, again, you brought up, I know you kind of brought it up in passing, but kind of a stunning reminder of the diversity of this country.
Yeah.
I mean, just scroll down these and yes, okay, these were edited and chosen for probably their
but we all came from diversity. Somewhere else.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
And you know, on Amazon, their hardcover copies are going for $144.
Yeah. Up to $600 for the first edition. Jeez. Yeah.
So,
maybe Aperture will do another printing.
Yeah. Regardless, it is pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah.
So,
neat stuff.
Put that out there.
From immigrants, we go to civil rights.
Yep.
Magnum, favorites of the show.
Yep.
Have posted both some recent and some not so recent photos of civil rights photographs in America. And,
still love that Malcolm X Eve Arnold shot.
Oh, come on.
It's classic. On. Classic.
You and
classic.
I.
Classic.
You and I combined will never be that cool ever.
Yeah, look at that, man. And you know what else kills me about Malcolm X is that Denzel really does look like him.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That could be Denzel Washington dressed up as Malcolm X in that shot.
Sure.
You know, like it just kind of works. But yeah, they put together...
Very powerful. And as Bill said, as you're looking through these, look at the names associated, not just in the subject matter, but with the pictures. Look at the photographers who are represented here. I mean, some of the best that we reference constantly.
Yeah. It's serious heavies. Something beautiful about it.
That Bruce Davidson shot of the African-American kid with vote, you know, sort of on his forehead into the makeup or paint or whatever that's on his forehead.
Well, I think the angle is that it's white face, right?
Yeah.
Which is even doubly interesting. Yeah, the Danny Lyon picture of the colored only cab.
Yeah.
And God, the people getting knocked down by the water spray. It's just like unbelievable.
It's amazing. On this, have you seen the trailer yet for I Am Not Your Negro?
No. I don't think
Go watch this. Documentary film.
What's his name? For God's sakes. Yes.
You're there. Come on. James.
James Baldwin.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
And apparently the story goes, I watched an interview with Samuel Jackson, who does the narration for it.
Yep.
And the filmmaker, Raoul Peck, wanted him from the beginning, knew he wanted him. And Sam was in like, I don't know, Uganda, I think he said, filming.
Okay.
And Peck flew down to meet him and they recorded it in a couple of days. The narration while he was on location doing another film and came back. And I just thought that was kind of cool.
Nowadays you could do that on your phone, man.
Right.
Let's go back to the top of the show.
Right. Send him a little Rode mic or something and then just plug it into your phone.
I'd be interested to watch that. You know what I really like? I put a link to the film website. I like the design of the cover. Just his eyes and the big chipe, you know? Oh, it's nice.
They showed this film
black, white, and red. Can't go wrong.
They showed it at the African American History Museum over the weekend.
Oh, okay. Can you get in there now or not?
It's supposed to be easier day of, but I think pre-ordered or pre-scheduled, whatever. I think those are still through March or April.
So if I showed up at 9:30 one morning on a weekday when I was down there, I'd probably get it.
Maybe. Yeah, sure.
All right.
It's a beautiful museum.
I will put a link to the movie or to the the movie's website in the show notes. So last night I was sitting and listening to Henry Rollins on the Joe Rogan podcast, the Joe Rogan Experience.
I like.
How do you feel about Henry Rollins? You like him?
I think he's articulate. I think he's intelligent. I think that he has carved out another career for himself. That while to some, maybe myself included, appears wholly unique from his previous career as a frontman for Black Flag, it's an extension of his frontman as Black Flag. It's an evolution of that role.
Yeah, and for those of us who, like, I was around when Black Flag was around, but I was very young. You know, mm-hmm. Black Flag was not in my experience growing up, even though I knew people who were listening to them later. I was first introduced to him as the spoken word recordings.
Ah, okay.
That he did in the 80s. I mean, I knew of Black Flag, but I was just like, oh, that scary band. Cause you know, you're 8 years old and you know,
right.
Scary.
And he was one of those larger than life kind of guys. He was
absolutely.
Like,
famously like doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, doesn't really do drugs. You know what I mean? Like it's just not in his world, you know? Anyway, there was this long rambling 2 hours and 40 minute interview, which if you're up for it is all pretty interesting. Fascinating stories. You know, he's a storyteller, right?
Yeah, he's terrific.
Raconteur. Yeah. But one of the things that he mentioned, Jeffrey, is that he has a running log of every show he's ever played, every album he's listened to in order.
Wow.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff. And I was thinking about the idea of recording the details, the minute details of your life, like keeping a meticulous record of your life. And now I know you keep notebooks.
I keep post-it notes.
Well, you keep more notebooks than your average Joe. But my question is, other than the fact that he's probably pretty, you know, has pretty obvious OCD tendencies and ADHD attention kind of things, right? He admits to a lot. Apparently he was one of the first kids on Ritalin when he was a kid. Interestingly enough, but beyond just your own obsessive nature and being able to prove when a kid comes up to you and goes, "Oh my God, I saw you guys play in 1982 and at so-and-so in Oklahoma City," he goes, "No, it's either 81 or 83. We didn't play there in 82. No, it was 82. Right. No, I have the book here. We didn't play in 82.
Like, yeah, I was there. Believe me.
Other than being able to be that obsessive about proving people wrong, what is there value in keeping those kinds of records? Or is that
there's value to him.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Is it just a personal value or is there a larger, like, should we all be doing more of this kind of stuff? You know,
no, I don't think we should all be doing.
I mean, even your email, like I have my email, all of my old email is in Gmail, like all my Outlook stuff. I converted to Mbox files and then brought them into Thunderbird and actually connected to IMAP through Gmail and then dropped it all in there. So all of my old email is all searchable inside of Gmail.
I don't do that.
Well, which
I purge my email like taxes, like every, you know, X number of years, I delete everything.
Right. Well, see, it's funny because I'm actually currently bumping up against my 17 gig limit on Gmail. I'm at 16.9 gigs out of 17. And there's a big banner up top that says you're running low on storage space. You need
What could you possibly need from 2010?
Well, here's the thing is that every once in a while, it's like, I'll search some person that I know and some email will come up from 2004 and I'll read it and I'll be like, oh my God, that's the first time before we even knew each other. Here we are interacting. You know, it's like keeping your correspondence, right? It's like keeping your letters. And what the hell does it cost me? Well, this cost me nothing. It may end up costing me $2 a month to have a terabyte of space or whatever it is, 100 gigs. It's certainly not necessary. And when Henry Rollins dies or, you know, you die, who's going to read your notebooks? You know what I mean? Or when Henry Rollins dies, will these things be meaningful to anybody but he who wrote them? I'm just wondering
partially depends on the context of your life. I mean, it sounds like
if you're the president of the United States, it means more than if you're not.
No. no. No, I think that somebody like Henry, you know, while we're on him as an example,
yep.
he from my perspective has led this phenomenally interesting life. Multiple career paths or arcs,
yeah.
Experiences that differ from my own. So I would probably be engaged, entertained in reading the accounts of his life, in reading yeah. a biography and flipping through and seeing, you know, page scans of his notebooks or you know, stacks of his cassette tapes or reel-to-reel tapes or
right,
whatever.
Right.
Now, the other side of that could be true. To him, having led his life, my life experiences may be wildly interesting to him because right. they're so far removed from his own. So, yep. I mean, it really becomes a matter of perspective and context, or context becomes a matter of perspective. Maybe that's a better way to look at it.
Context, you know? Becomes a matter of perspective. Interesting.
Because, I mean, our own experience, at some point, our own experience becomes mundane because it's our experience, our own day to day.
Right, right, right. Even though it could be fascinating to someone else, right?
Absolutely.
But this is obviously a guy who, in some way, finds it satisfying and safe mm-hmm. to know, to record all of this minute detail.
Well,
I think it's an interesting tick. You
in
know?
Listening to Henry over the years, I haven't listened to this particular one, but in listening to Henry over the years, he does have wildly entertaining stories.
Yeah, he's anecdote so, central.
So to me, as a listener of his life story, I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. somebody else may listen to it and go, you know, I'm not really that. Or they may look at his bio and make the assumption, this is even worse, they may look at the bio, former frontman of Black Flag punk icon, you know, whatever it is,
yeah, yeah.
and go, nah, that's not my cup of tea. I couldn't possibly be interested in anything this guy has to say.
Right.
But you'd be wrong.
Right,
because I've listened to enough of Henry Rollins to know that
anybody would find his stories interesting. Sure,
absolutely, yeah. absolutely. He's one of those people who is just a phenomenal storyteller.
Yeah. So anyway, I just think it's interesting. And if anybody has any thoughts on the matter, if anybody out there, any of our listeners, are crazy meticulous personal record keepers, I'd be interested to hear why you do it and how detailed you get. Because mm-hmm. I don't know, I find it interesting. Mm-hmm. New White House photographer has finally been announced.
I saw this.
Shayla Craighead.
Shayla Craighead.
First okay. female White House photographer, head photographer, maybe ever? I'm trying to think back of all the people in that documentary. I think they were all men, weren't they?
Yeah, maybe.
So that's an interesting choice.
There are some photos. Is she? Wait a minute.
This is her website.
So has she been hired by the family like Pete Souza was, or just is she the official?
Well, wasn't West Pete Wing Souza? Pete Souza was paid by the family, or was he paid by the White House?
He was hired. He was their personal photographer. The way I
are you sure?
It. Yeah, that's
I think the he way was the I official White House photographer.
But he was hired by the way I was it was explained to me is he worked directly for the family, not for the White House.
Oh, interesting. Former photographer, let's see, last week reported was on the top of the list to be President Donald Trump's chief White House photographer. I'm pretty sure that Pete Souza had the title of chief White House photographer.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it was dual roles.
Interestingly enough, in an article I just found about it, an earlier version of this article said that Craighead was the first woman to hold this coveted position. Apparently, this is not correct. Sharon Farmer was the first, taking over for Robert McNeely after Clinton after Robert McNeely left the Clinton White House. So apparently, Sharon Farmer was the White House photographer for a little while under Clinton in 1999. So. For a short time at the end of Clinton's thing there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I, you know, wish her all good luck and all the rest of it. It's just going to be interesting to see the pictures that actually get released and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm going to send Pete an email and ask him.
Okay. You can do that.
So maybe we'll have clarification by the next show. I love his work, man. He's so good.
Tweet at him. Ugh. He'll probably just write you back there too.
Yeah.
He's always up there. One last little news story. Lennart Nilsson, whose pictures you have all seen. He was a Swiss photographer who used sort of micro cameras to take pictures of essentially embryos in utero.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these pictures are classic sort of unbelievable things that people talk about, you know,
right.
Fetus that at 20 weeks.
Photo, when it's, yeah. In the series here on the article, that's stupid famous.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Of a fetus.
Same
at
with 16 the fourth
weeks.
One. Yeah. Sucking its thumb. Yeah. That's super famous photograph.
Exactly. Wow. Died, and they show him with his camera. I can't quite tell. That almost looks like a movie camera.
Yeah,
it looks like a Super 8 camera or something.
Maybe
with a
16.
Bump at the top. 16.
Yeah, maybe 16.
But either way,
look at the winder on the side under his right hand.
Yeah, so it's got to be. But it looks like some sort of long, like, oh God, I can never pronounce that. Amniocentesis, is that what it is? Where they stick the needle into the thing to like pull out amniotic fluid. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
It's a procedure they do. I think it must be some sort of similar thing like that, where he goes in and then can put the camera down the middle of the tube to get close to the fetus without, you know, messing with it. I'm just a photographer who happened to be fascinated with mankind, he said at his website. He died in Stockholm on Saturday. He was 94 years old.
Wow.
So this guy was doing stuff, you know, way back in the day that it's, you know, this just goes to show you how wide and broad the subject and field of photography is, right?
Sure.
People doing stuff all over the place. I mean, what does this guy have in common with, you know, any of us? Well, other than the fact that he's using a camera, not all that much, but at the same time, he's doing something that changed the world, changed the way people saw.
Sure.
You know,
changed the way we understand part of the
right.
world.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So,
sure.
Anyway, just wanted to put that out there. Lennart Nilsson. So I'll put a link in the show notes to his obituary in the New York Times. Anything else you want to say?
Nah.
Let's go to the group.
Lots of good stuff in the group. Both from last week's hashtag covert and just, you know, people doing their thing, posting cool pictures. Ludovic, stolen picture in the library. That's kind of cool. I love the shallow kind of depth of field in the foreground there, looking through the stacks of books. That's a really cool shot.
Can't go wrong. Yeah. Oh, I like that one.
Yeah. It's nice, right?
Covert. Definitely covert.
Yeah, absolutely. Nicholas Govis. I love that worn out. Man, that's a cool story.
Oh, the Chinatown one.
Yeah, with the bikes and the cup and saucer. Cool name.
Yep.
Mario Mirabile, trying to be covert, not quite pulling it off. I don't know, man. I think you pulled it off. And had that person been like peeking out at you while you were taking the picture, although it would have been a cool picture, you know.
No, I think then. It's, I think that, well, either, no, the question is whether the guy is being covert.
Right.
I think he maybe is trying to be covert and not pulling it off by the sense that half of him is hanging out.
I dig the photo though and love the checkered Vans. Had some of those. You ever have checkered Vans back in the day?
Yeah, I was always a slip-on checkered Vans guy.
Yeah.
I've tried to wear Vans as an adult and my feet are too wide now.
Well, so, and there's very little support. I mean, let's be honest. It's like a big slab of rubber.
What are you talking about? You wear Converse All-Stars. Those have no support.
I don't wear Converse All-Stars.
I thought I've seen you in little slip-on. No, am I wrong?
Those aren't Converse.
Oh, what were they?
Well, I've had, let's see.
Could have sworn I've seen you in like, the low top Chucks.
They're not, they're not Chucks. There's something, I don't remember what they're,
okay.
I don't have them anymore.
Fair enough.
But yeah, they're hard to wear for long periods of time.
Yeah, man. None of that stuff fits me anymore. I'm like old man, need like support insoles and whatnot.
Right. Dennis. Love that photograph inside the theater. Real wide, slightly fish-eyed.
Yep, yep.
Absence is the hashtag that he was using. Love the yellow. That's a terrific one, too, in a parking lot. That's super cool.
Mike's picture of his daughter is pretty cute. Because she's sleeping and he took her picture.
Yep.
It's good.
Andrew Shields, worn out in Detroit through the reflections. That's cool.
Yeah.
Might have mentioned that last time. Not sure. But yeah, good stuff. Keep going. Keep going. This week, at work.
At work. All right. I will put a link in the show notes.
At work.
There we go.
Link so are in you, the show are notes. You at work or are you at work?
Dum, dum, dum.
Right. Put that in your pipe and smoke
John Burridge and his prop pistol. Did you see this photo sharing one?
Yeah, yeah.
John Wick. You like that first John Wick movie?
Loved it. Cannot wait to see the second one. Absolutely thrilled. Thought it was fun.
Yeah. Good choreography.
Watched a behind the scenes.
Good fight choreography.
Yeah. Watched a behind the scenes talking about Keanu and just how much prep. I mean, Keanu was doing like 6 days a week for hours and hours a day of gun training, car training, martial arts training. I mean, just phenomenal commitment. So well done, Keanu.
He's always been that way, right? Ever since Seems The Matrix.
Yeah. You know, famously donated a large chunk of his profits to the special effects team behind The Matrix.
Did he?
Yeah.
Saying that basically it wouldn't have existed without them.
Absolutely. So. Gave away millions of dollars to the special effects team.
Aww. Keanu. I'm gonna look that up.
Here.
By the way, I looked up Keanu Reeves gives, and it says up seat on subway. that was the what? Auto. Apparently, he gave up seat on subway. What?
So anyway, good guy. Seems like a good guy. Seems I forget the actor's name who plays. Look at that.
The actor signed away a sizable back end deal for two Matrix sequels. According to the paper, he handed over valuable profit-sharing points to the franchise's special effects and costume design team. Good for him.
What's his name? The guy who plays Broyles in Fringe. Remember him?
Sure. Yep. Yeah, the big, tall, black guy, really taut skin, like that guy.
Yes. Yep. Yes. He's the like the hotel concierge in where all the assassins stay.
Lance Reddick.
Yeah. Love him.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's always fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, can't wait to see it. Looks like it'll be fun.
All right.
John Wick 2.
John Wick 2. Whoever thought that would become a big, big hit?
Yeah.
I mean, apparently it's... you.
Well, I hoped.
All right. Who are we doing for photographer of the week this week?
I don't know, but I think I'm coughing up a lung.
Hope is not a lung. Hey, speaking of just a little quick aside, have you seen this, the new zombie show on Netflix, the, Santa Clarita Diet?
I have heard of it. It's, who the actors?
It's
Timothy Oliphant, right?
Oliphant and Oliphantastic, as he's been called. And,
which he is.
And, what's her name from ET?
Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, go, if you have not seen Justified, I think it's all on Amazon Prime. Walton Goggins and Timothy Oliphant are so fantastic together as opposite sides of the law. Terrific show.
It's a cowboy thing, isn't it?
Not really.
Okay.
Takes place in Kentucky. I mean, he does wear a cowboy hat.
Okay.
But he's not a cowboy.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, so it's pretty cute. Conrad and I have been watching it because, well, she does her zombie show. Right. The reanimated podcast. So she has to talk about it. So we've been watching it, and I'm generally not a fan of zombie stuff. Like, it just kind of, I'm like, ugh, I'm sick and tired of, it's the same tropes over and over and over and over and over.
It's a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah. But they do a cute spin on it, and they have a daughter who's like involved in their neighbor kid, and the neighbor kid's like in love with the daughter. And it's like, there's like some cute little interactions in it, and it's well written, and it's good. It's almost as good as The Good Place, which I finished last week, which was really good too. So anyway, photographer of the week.
Hey, photographer of the week. Did we decide we're going to do this all month?
Is that okay? Let's try it. Let's do it.
All right. So all month, it is Black History Month. So we are going to try and celebrate Black photographers, beginning with.
Okay, do we need a roll?
Was that a little? Did you hear that? I don't know if you can hear that. Anyway, we're going to begin with Addison Scurlock.
Addison Scurlock, great name.
Yeah, isn't that a great name? And there's a terrific article on Smithsonian.com that begins, for more than half a century, the Scurlock Studio chronicled the rise of Washington's black middle class. And these photos are beautiful, absolutely wonderful. There's a great video on this article as well. Be sure to watch that. So, a little background here. Long before a black family moved into the president's quarters at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C., was an African-American capital. As far back as the Reconstruction, black families made their way to the city on their migration north. By the turn of the 20th century, the District of Columbia had a strong and aspiring black middle class whose members plied almost every trade in town. Yet in 1894, a black business leader named Andrew F. Hillier noted an absence. Quote, there is a splendid opening for a first-class Afro-American photographer, as we all like to have our pictures taken.
Mm-hmm.
Addison Scurlock filled the bill. He'd come to Washington in 1900 from Fayetteville, North Carolina, with his parents and had two siblings. Although he was only 17, he listed photographer as his profession in that year's census. After apprenticing with white photographer named Moses Rice from 1901 to 1904, also a cool name,
Moses Rice,
Scurlock started a small studio in his parents' house. By 1911, he had opened a storefront studio on U Street, which is a terrific part of D.C., where Ben's Chili Bowl is.
Yep.
Yeah. The main street of Washington's African-American community. He put his best portraits in the front window, also called the Black Broadway, mm-hmm. because of so many people playing at the Lincoln Theater.
Yep.
Anyway, terrific read. And there are some other articles in the show notes, one on blackpast.org.
Formal portraits, and as well as sort of slice of life kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, like reportage kind of things.
Sports teams, people hanging out in clubs, marriage shots. You know, so it's an interesting eclectic view of probably that community at that time. You know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep. Fascinating.
Yeah, there's a big. You know, I gotta tell you, there's a lot of stuff on Pinterest.
Yeah.
I don't dig that you've got to log in just to see stuff.
Yeah, that's Pinterest's thing. They're trying to pump up their numbers so that when it's like, oh, we have 6 billion active users.
And then when you do log in, it doesn't take you to the pictures that you just were trying to look at. It takes you to some other thing.
Yeah. Well, that's the way.
Knuckleheads.
Yeah, knuckleheads.
Anyway, some really cool stuff. I would imagine that, wouldn't you think a lot of this stuff would be Library of Congress as well?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out where this stuff occurred or where.
It seems to be from a lot of disparate sources. It doesn't seem to be pulling, at least some of the Pinterest stuff doesn't seem to be pulling from a single source.
Yeah. Where did he die? I'm trying to find. 1964. So man, just missed.
Yeah. Yeah.
1883 to 1964. This man was there and like just right there missed the changes. Yeah. Well, you know, he precipitated the change.
Right. Over the decades, Spurlock photographed nationally prominent African Americans such as Booker T. Washington, Du Bois, Mary McLeod, Bethune, Archie Alexander, Billy Eckstein, Duke Ellington, Charles Drew.
These are all great people. A lot of people are talking about them right now.
Yeah. what does that even mean? What are you talking about?
the whole Trump thing, talking about...
I'm not. You know what? Yeah, whatever. I'm not. Whatever.
Frederick Douglass, right?
Anyway. I'd say he's doing some great things.
Yeah.
He's doing some really great things.
Anything else?
No.
Okay, cool.
No, I don't think so. These are terrific photographs.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
So,
Addison, well found.
Scurlock.
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com. You can email us. You can give us a call, 347-687-9411. We'll leave us a voicemail. And you can, let's see what else, Instagram and Twitter at Bill Wadman at Jeffrey Sidoris. If you want to follow my new thing, it's Wadman365 on Twitter. Anything else?
You know what? Can I? Yeah, actually, I have to give you grief about this. You know what? I'm going to.
About what?
Did you really tell Irving Penn to eat his heart out? Come on, Wad.
Well, on. You know, come he's going to come on, back Wadman. From the dead to have to do it. So
your modesty overfloweth.
I'm the most modest photographer. My portraits are so modest.
I think I was referring to the setup more than anything.
Come on, Wadman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oi, Wadman. Oi.
Yo, come on. Yeah. Anything else? God, I feel like we're missing something. And I feel
like we are too. What are we missing? Did the email? Did the Twitter thing with the? What are we missing?
I think we forgot to say goodbye.
Maybe that's it. All right. Thanks for listening, gang.
Yeah, we'll see y'all on the flip side.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
At 2:51.
Have a great day. 2:51. I know, we're getting close to the
five,
the whole
five
thing.
Full years.
Yeah. Yes. Crazy.
We're going to get our master's degrees in a few weeks.
In what? What could we possibly get a master's degree in?
God, the hell if I know.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a fantastic week. Go take some pictures.
Yeah. We'll see you later.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain. See, something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say. Though I know your words will lay me out. So